It's time for our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party.
Recently, the government has signed a memorandum of understanding with the mayors of Auckland, Otago and Western Bay of Plenty councils over the government's expectations of city and regional deals. These deals aim to tighten the partnership between central and local governments. For our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party, I speak to MP Cameron Luxton about what to expect heading forward regarding the relationship between local, regional and central government. We also discussed last week's Youth Parliament. Youth Parliament provides the opportunity for 143 rangatahi aged 16 to 24 years old as youth MPs representing MPs across the political spectrum and youth press gallery members to understand the country's political processes, understand how government works, and replicate the parliamentary process. Youth MPs had previously accused event organisers of censoring their speeches. This follows the youth MPs being asked to remove elements of their speeches that were critical of government policies, such as the Treaty Principles Bill and pay equity. However, the Ministry of Youth Development has come out saying the way they communicated their wishes with youth MPs could have been clearer and more concise. The General Manager of the Ministry, John Robertson, says reviewing speeches and suggesting changes was a part of the process, but these recommendations are not enforced. I also spoke to Luxton about these accusations and whether they are tantamount to censorship. Finally, we discussed calls by over half of the youth MPs represented in this year's Youth Parliament from across the political spectrum, renewing calls for the voting age to be lowered to allow 16 to 17-year-olds the right to vote. Five ACT youth MPs, including the youth MP representing Cameron Luxton, Fletcher Brown, had signed a letter calling for the voting age to be reduced. This follows the Supreme Court's 2022 ruling that found the current voting age is unjustified age discrimination and goes against the Human Rights Act 1993. We also discussed these renewed calls to lower the voting age, but first we discussed the government's expectations of city and regional deals. It is expected that the first city and regional deal will be finalised by the end of this year. When will we see the effects of a closer collaboration between central and local governments?
Yeah, thanks for this question. It's quite an important part of unlocking the productive future of New Zealand and making a happier and healthier community for New Zealanders to live in. You've asked about the time frame. The deals will setting strategic gateways to get people to have the incentives and the ability to partner up and pile in cash and investment over the next 10 years. So we're expecting to see some benefits of this come over the medium to long term. The point of a city regional deal is something that we've been actually, I can remember campaigning on it in the Tauranga by-election in 2022, saying what we need is some long-term thinking here. So we don't have the changing infrastructure choices by governments as they come and go. Cities, regions need long-term planning, and governments need to know that when they're bringing taxpayers' dollars to the table, there is a long-term outlook. So this is going to, these deals over these 10-year gateways are going to be setting alignments that put city regional councils on the same path as what governments are expecting, like genuine partnerships that bring the skills of both local and central government to the table, and making a pathway to delivery that means that contractors and others bringing finance and skills to the table will know that what they're getting is a long-term, better managed plan for the development of specific regions, as the ones you've mentioned, Auckland, Western Bay of Plenty and Otago Lakes District.
Infrastructure Minister Chris Bishop says councils will have to agree with the government's vision of economic growth, housing, water services and transport. How much of a say will councils get in the decision-making process?
Councils have been able to put up plans. There has been a number of proposals brought to central government about what a region wants to look like. So it might be a region that has a strong horticultural base, a region that has a strong ability to deliver infrastructure that can improve their own specific industries. So councils and regions have been working on their proposals for city regional deals to bring to government. and asking alongside, this is what we would like, what can government also do to help us achieve our regional goals? So it is a genuine partnership between local, regional and central government to make sure that the people of these areas get what they would like and a bit more certainty that it's going to come. So I think the answer to the question is a great deal of input from the very beginning.
Regarding Bishop's aforementioned comments, has the government taken into account the potential for a changeover in government and a change in their economic growth plans, etc.? How will the city and regionals deal account for a potential shift in power?
Well, this is part of the genius of these ideas, is once you have regions coming together and agreeing on a set of plans and a long-term vision for their area, and government also agreeing with the government's, as you say, vision for housing development and economic growth, the potential to improve New Zealand's economic and social outlooks. Once these come together and are agreed, it will take a pretty game government to change those sort of plans without having something even better in place. So part of it is just agreeing on a long-term outlook that means that anybody who would like to change this will be taking a drastic step backwards. But also, we've got a long-term, the minister that you've spoken about, Minister Bishop, is working on long-term infrastructure plans with the Infrastructure Commission leading that work. And that's been much touted as a bipartisan approach to long-term infrastructure. I mean, New Zealand, we need to get our alignment right on what we're trying to achieve for our country. New Zealanders want better connectivity to be able to get to their businesses, their families, their destinations in a way that doesn't mean their life is spent in traffic. They want to be able to afford houses in places where they want to live, where there's opportunities for social and economic benefits so that you can have a job that you enjoy and live in a community that you want to be a part of. New Zealanders want these things, as all humans want them, but we really need to make sure that we take the long-term game out of this, of people promising a project and then the government changing and that project getting scrapped. I mean, this is why I mentioned I was talking about this in 2022 in the Tauranga by-election. Tauranga is a region that has suffered greatly from this sort of back and forth, starting a plan, cancelling it. The Takatimu Northern Link that links Tauranga north up towards Katikati and onto the Golden Triangle is a project that's been started and stopped over successive governments. We need to take this sort of yo-yo back and forth problem that we're getting in infrastructure delivery and planning out of the system. That's what this is a step on the way to doing.
On to our next topic. Youth Parliament for 2025 has recently concluded, with claims that youth MPs were censored for speaking on the Treaty Principles Bill, pay equity and voting rights. Before we discuss the claims of censorship, overall, how were the youth MPs' speeches and how was the overall atmosphere of this year's Youth Parliament?
Oh, it's good of you to ask, Joe. Actually, I was down there for 90% of the Youth Parliament. I went down for the opening and had to leave just before the closing. So I was there for most of it. I got to say, I was incredibly impressed by the collegiality of the youth MPs. Everyone bringing their own views from their community into Parliament and working together. I went and sat in on some of the parliamentary working groups, which were the things you don't see in the House. We're a group of youth MPs, about a dozen, would get together and talk about an issue that's important to the day and present a working group outcomes, their recommendations, and how what they've found in their investigations. You know, these youth MPs worked in incredibly collaborative ways. I was very impressed with what I saw in those rooms. In Parliament, there was a group of young people who were passionately defending and proposing their ideas. And that's what Youth Parliament's about, giving young people who are politically minded a chance to go and experience Parliament and get, one of the most intense civics lessons you're going to get. When it comes to the question about supposed censorship, I talked to quite a few youth MPs about it. Most of the members I spoke to who said it was a misunderstanding and a nonsense. There was no censorship. That what really had happened was, youth MPs, unlike what would you call them, normative MPs don't have the level of free speech that a sworn Member of Parliament has. A Member of Parliament can't be tried for defamation or other things like falsehoods in the House, whereas youth MPs don't have those specific privileges. And so my understanding of what happened was the Ministry of Youth Development just wanted to make sure that the kids that were taking advantage of this opportunity weren't setting themselves up to some kind of greater problem. And the suggestions were made to not say things that might, you know, lead yourself to future trouble. That said, when you have a ministry give you some suggestions on how to structure a speech or what should be in it, I can see how having someone in that sort of position could lead to someone feeling that they were being guided in a certain way. But from the conversations I've had with members who were there as chaperones and guides for these youth MPs through the process, that was never the intention. And I think the speeches that I certainly heard in the House would lead me to think there was no censorship to speak of.
Speaking more to the Ministry of Youth Development and what you were just saying before, you are correct. They have come out saying that their communication with youth MPs on elements of their speeches could have been clearer and more consistent. This may be a little early to say, but what are the government planning on doing to address these concerns heading into the next Youth Parliament?
Look, I'm on the Youth Parliament Working Group as the ACT Party representative to that cross-party group. We haven't met post the Youth Parliament of this year, so we'll see what comes back with. But it's not necessarily it's a bipartisan organisation, so it will be a bipartisan solution. I would just say that the rules and the practices were the same as the 2022 Youth Parliament. So we'd have to assess how they operated in that Parliament versus this one. And if there's any changes on practice, which I suspect was more the issue rather than policy, then that could be worked through.
As well as this, a majority of youth MPs from across the political spectrum represented at this year's Youth Parliament have renewed calls for the voting age for local and general elections to be reduced to allow 16 and 17-year-olds to vote. Five ACT youth MPs, including the youth MP representing yourself, Fletcher Brown, have signed the open letter calling for the voting age to be reduced. What does this say about how young people generally are viewing the voting age of 18, and would the ACT Party consider having a conversation on lowering the voting age in the future?
Yeah, so I was talking about Fletcher. I would just like to say Fletcher is one amazing young person. He's a young guy who decided that the academic pathway wasn't for him and that he left school and went and took on a diesel mechanics apprenticeship. And he's doing amazing work over in the East Coast, keeping our agriculture and horticultural industry thriving by making sure the machines that are being used to go about the cultivation of our exports are under great care. So look, people like Fletcher are the driving force of our economy. They're the ones that get their hands dirty with the hydraulic fuel and the diesel dust and making sure that New Zealand's economy keeps going. And I wanted to make sure that someone who's taking that on, like Fletcher, someone who's chosen the trade path, much like I did. I also did a building apprenticeship, and I wanted to make sure that people could see that it's not just one track. You can take on a trade path, and that's what Fletcher did incredibly well, going down to Parliament and representing the trades. You know, as someone who also was working at a young age, you know, you can see that you're contributing to the country, but you're also learning. And when it comes to whether the Act will support a reduce in the age, that's just not something that I think the country will benefit from at all. You've got to think about the chances of actually having that vote. I mean, if you're 17 or 18 now, chances are you're going to be voting in the 2026 election. And if you're 15 or 16, you'll be voting in the 2029 election. This doesn't mean that you can't. This means that you're going to get a chance to vote soon, but also you've got a lot of chance if you want to take it up. If you're a motivated young person like the people that came down to Wellington with their diverse views, that means that you have got a chance to get involved in politics at a local level, at an organisational level, and have your say. Get out there and get some experience in the political realm. also get some experience in the working world and figure out if the decisions that you think your peers are going to be making align with how you think about the world, and if not, change those views or have a say on the general conversation that we have as a population. There's plenty of ways to get involved in politics before voting, and actually having people who should be a majority still in education or training, making voting choices on who pays the tax, you know, we should be taxpayers making those decisions as much as we can, or at least able to get to that level, or have that level of experience in the world where you've seen that happening. So I don't think that the country will benefit. I don't think that we will get anything extra out of bringing that vote forward a couple of years, but I do think that there is plenty of opportunity in our democracy for people to get involved in politics who wish to.
That was the ACT Party's Cameron Luxton on the government's expectations for city and regional deals and last week's Youth Parliament.
That was our weekly chat with the ACT Party.
We'll be right back. Text in on 5395 any of your thoughts on these pieces.